Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live across the United States of America, Europe, and the world, this is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio. And I know a lot of you wonder why I continue to emphasize this every day, because it's the foundation principles of what I believe my life and what I know my life is dedicated to, and what I hope you're dedicated to. Because human rights mean just what it says, that human beings must have some sort of code of conduct, some sort of ethical principles to guide themselves by. I do believe in the golden rule: you do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I know that sounds crazy for somebody who was once in the KKK, but whatever you think of me, and whatever you think of my ideas, I would challenge you to read what I wrote during those periods of times. Tune in the international programs that I was on. I was on many Donahue shows, which you can still find on the web. I had many national interviews of all kinds and many very hostile interviewers. And you will find that all during my most radical years, when I did a border watch, a border watch in the Ku Klux Klan. By the way, there was no violence and there were no guns, even though there was a documentary that went to a Klan group in California, one of our groups in California. And so they seduced these people in the sense that, oh, they're doing a fair documentary, so they want to see how they live and how they move. And of course, there were a lot of radical communists out in California at the time. And they were certainly concerned about the security for their families. So the people interviewing them said, well, yeah, but can you defend yourself? And they said, of course we can, legally and properly. You know, we have a strict nonviolent code. David Duke, our leader, and in our oath is contained the absolute oath, our swearing position that each of us, we would not engage in any illegal activity, in any violent activity of any kind. We condemned it. And not only did we not endorse it, we condemned it. And we pointed out that not only that it was a moral crime, and we didn't think it was worthy of our people or our traditions or the values of Western civilization or the values of our Christian faith, because this organization was very pro-Christian in its very essence. The organization literally was pro-Christian. And Christianity says you treat everybody fairly. Now, I would make a very nuanced and a very important fact knowledgeable to you. Obviously, I believe that Christianity, and this is so true, as compared to Judaism as compared to the teachings of Christ, practice what's called harem, or mass destruction of their enemies, including killing of the firstborn of the Egyptian enemies, even after it says by the scribes. And again, whenever I talk about the Old Testament, I'm not talking about what God actually said. I'm talking about what the scribes say, that they're supremacist, that they're genocidal presentation of God. They wanted a God like a gangster. They wanted the Jewish people to fear God so much that it seemed like a gangster would fear their gangster head so much that if they ordered them to kill somebody's wife or children in retribution or as a warning or something for the gang, that they knew that if they disobeyed that order, that they would die. They had to follow the Don's, so to speak, the Don's ruling. And often they made people, when they joined these kinds of mafia criminal organizations, they made them do an illegal act or horrible act, which they could expose them later if they wanted to, that they did this crime, this murder or this horrible thing, that was essentially blackmail. It was essentially a way of keeping them doing what they want. And I truly believe, and I've read the Old Testament. I've actually read it. I actually read it twice through. Two times in my life. And the first time I read it was very early on. And I saw a lot of things that disturbed me in there. Things that I just couldn't reconcile with my mind. But I said, oh, well, that's the way when I talked to my pastor, I talked to any religious leaders because I was a church going, very dedicated Christian, and I still am, a dedicated person to following Christ. But when I asked them about these things, they said, well, we can't judge the ethics of God. We have no right to do that. God, these books of the Old Testament are his words, same as he took his finger and wrote these words. And then when you start reading the words, you have these qualms, you have these really sinking feelings in your stomach when it talks about killing the enemies of the Jews, man, woman, child, even to the point of little babies suckling at their mother's breast. Now, when I read these things, even at an earlier age, I had questions about it. There are questions I couldn't answer. I said, well, maybe someday I'll understand it. Because I focused on Christ. I focused on the teachings of Jesus Christ, the golden rule. I focused on what he taught us. And he taught us that there was nothing more sacred than little boys and girls. That the truth is that God loved children. You know, they're the apple of his eye. He literally said that. He said that children are of the kingdom of God. Jesus Christ also told us that there was no chosen people, that you don't get a free pass to heaven by your genealogy. It wasn't about a master race theory. It wasn't about one race, the Jews, being superior to all other people and having the right to rule over and dictate and enslave and practice usury against and do everything imaginable against others, kill the man, woman, and child. No. Christ said no to all that. He said, my Father and I came for all mankind. And you know what? When push comes to shove, I go with the words of Jesus. I go with the New Testament. I go with his words. If there's any conflict, if there's any contrast, and God did give us a brain, and Jesus gave us a brain. I don't even understand lots of the Old Testament. I don't understand the idea that somehow it was supposedly an evil thing to eat of the tree of knowledge. That, oh my God, if Adam and Eve eat from the tree of knowledge, this is, of course, a metaphysical and a metaphorical kind of story. It's a mythos, actually, because I believe that at the time that you would say that the garden existed or Adam and Eve would have existed, there was already massive civilizations all over the world, massive peoples, decent people. They had kingdoms and villages and all sorts of things. Agriculture, also traditional hunter-gathering societies, long, long, long before Adam and Eve. We've dug up the bodies. We know how old they are. We know where they're found. We know where the first aspects of agriculture were. And it's like, okay, there's this story of creation that's fine and everything, but what was this a story to help people try to guide them in a sense? But was it, you know, what was it? Now, that doesn't mean that I condemn everybody that believes in the literal story that you see in the Old Testament. However, you have got to decide which story that you read in Genesis, because there's two stories of creation in Genesis. And unfortunately, if you believe that everything in the Bible, nothing conflicts, you might be surprised, but you read the two creation stories and they conflict with each other. The order is different. The little order of creation is different. All sorts of other things are different. And the tree of knowledge, I don't understand that principle because, my God, we know there's been evil in the world for a long time before Adam and Eve, there was evil in the world. And it was interesting when you read what Elyon said, which is one word for God, but Elyon actually in the Old Testament, according to the Old Testament itself, Elyon was the high God of the divine council, the highmost God. And he was supposed to be the cosmic God above all. And all nations, then, he is his sons, his children. This is what it says in Deuteronomy 32. This is what it also talks about in Psalms 82. Get out your Bible someday and read it and think about it. But it says this. And unfortunately, the Jewish Masoretic Bible kept changing the Old Testament over the centuries. And they changed the Old Testament in terms of the divine council, which was a council of gods, not God. Judaism itself, or what you call the religion of the Jews, which fundamentally became Yahwehism. And because it was Yahwehism, worshiping Yahweh, but along with other gods, no other gods before thee, is what it says in the Ten Commandments. There's lots of other things. But the idea, for instance, that Adam and Eve would be forbidden from eating from the tree of knowledge, in other words, they would know the difference between good and evil. They would have a sense between what's good and what's evil. And it says in there that, oh my God, we can't have them do that. Yahweh didn't want them to do that. Oh, then if they did that, they would be as knowledgeable as we are. They would be, they would be rivals to us. But you see, if you have a God that is a God of war, a God even of jealousy, revenge, a God of punishments that are even inflicted upon innocent children who've done no wrong. To the fourth generation, because it says it four or five times in the Old Testament. And even in the Old Testament, it says, God literally said, in the Old Testament, it says, I'm your God, and I'm jealous, and my name is jealousy. My name is jealousy. Jealousy. I can't imagine jealousy. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just don't understand God, but I can't understand. That sounds like a human trait to me. That sounds like a narcissist trait of some person. Narcissists are famous for their jealousy. If you have some sort of a organized criminal gang which you are trying to get power with and become rich and powerful and so forth. It was criminal and doing criminal things, stealing other people's land, their property, their homes, their businesses, their farms, their orchards, whatever, and that are invading other people and that are being instructed to slaughter whole populations genocidally, right? It's kind of important. For the people that are supporting you, don't understand the difference between good and evil. If you're doing some evil things, that is, or what would be called evil, it's important for them. And I do believe it's a theme that's almost every culture in the whole world. It comes along with being born as a human being. It just comes along in almost every society that we're born with this ethical sense. An ethical sense that it's wrong to kill, it's wrong to murder, it's wrong to rape, it's wrong to steal other people's property, it's wrong to kill anyone, much less the innocent, innocent babies, like it says in 1 Samuel, what Netanyahu quotes, even sent copies of the actual scripture to his army units. Kill everybody. Every man, the Palestinians are Amalekites. Well, they weren't even Amalekites. It's a big lie to begin with. Everything about the whole standpoint of Israel is a lie. It's not a Semitic state. Jews don't call themselves Semites, and they consider themselves absolutely fundamentally different from any Semite in the world. They consider themselves different from the entirety of humanity. It's us versus them. Us, this tiny sliver of humanity, 1/5 of 1% of humanity are Jews. Yet they believe all of humanity was built and created for one purpose, that is to serve Jews, literally serve Jews, who must bring Jews their tribute, their money. They must crawl on their bellies. That's what it says in Isaiah. Now, before you start saying we should do that because it says that in the Old Testament, it also says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Jesus changed that, didn't he? He says it said. He couldn't even say, well, it's one of our basic laws. No, he said it said that because he couldn't say everything at once. He had to speak in parables. But he said, no, it's not an eye for an eye. That is a doctrine of vengeance. That is a doctrine of escalation and vengeance and a cycle of violence that will grow and grow and grow. One person hits one person, they hit them back, and then they hit back. And, yeah, it goes on and on. The most important message I ever had for people getting married, and I married a few. I had a license to marry, and one of the things I told every married couple that I married in those days was that the most important thing you must remember, it's in the New Testament, is when you're hurt, when your loved one hurts, especially those close to you, your friends, your very wife or husband, your children, your parents, try to turn the other cheek. Just tell them, let them know that what they said hurt you or what they did hurt you. And ask them, ask them not to do that. It's pretty simple. And also not to just strike them back. Start to de-escalate. Make peace. It's also in the Beatitudes. It's not just about men and women, husbands and wives, and parents and children and their parents, their grandparents, their relatives, their brothers and sisters. It's not just about that. It's about nations. Blessed are the peacemakers, what Christ taught. That's not the overwhelming message of the Old Testament and the way they presented God in the Old Testament. And there's shocking things in there which are hard to talk about. And most of our pastors, priests, whatever, they don't talk about it because it's hard to explain it. They try to explain it, sometimes with apologia, but there's things that are so horrific that you read, and this is supposed to be sacred scripture. And by the way, when they say God's commanding this, what it's kind of like the mafiosa chief, in the gang that's saying, you got to do whatever the gang leader wants to. If he says go out and kill somebody's wife or children as a lesson to them or a lesson to the rest of us, you got to go do it. You got to do it. And if you don't do it, his vengeance will get upon you and your children and your wives. And that's precisely, there's things in the Old Testament that would shock any person. And any true Christian that reads of the teachings of Christ would say, this is not the same teaching that Christ gave us. I'm going to give one example. One example that needs to be talked about. It's uncomfortable talking about it. And I'm not condemning God. I'm telling you that there's a lot of things in the Old Testament that are written by lying scribes. And it even says so in the Old Testament. Now, if you believe that every line of the Old Testament is written by God, then you've got to follow those lines too. For instance, Jeremiah was one of the greatest. He was like the most animating prophet, the most, you know, one of most impressive and loved prophets ever in Judaism. And he said, beware of the lying pen of the scribes. He says, how can we call what we do justice when these scribes are lying to us? In other words, they're not presenting the world as it really is. You see, I don't, when it says in the Old Testament that God says, my name is jealousy, why would any God need to be jealous? Why would any God need to protect his reputation? He's God, after all. He's the power of the universe, the cosmos. But a scribe who is a narcissist and whose authority within the Judaic establishment, he takes his values and then he ascribes it to God, such as jealousy. That's what narcissists are known for, jealousy. You got to think about it for a second. Just the day before Christ was crucified, in his Last Supper, they were practicing the cedar dinner, the Old Testament cedar dinner, where God was smiting the enemies of the Jews. In the 10 plagues and everything else that's talked about. And it's not mentioned very much, but if you read the Old Testament again, these texts, you know, cry out to you that, is this really the word of God? It just makes any sense at all, where it says, quote, that Jesus, when after these plagues were hitting and everything, not Jesus, but we're talking about God, that after these plagues were striking the Egyptians, the Pharaoh was relenting, and he was about ready to let the people of Israel go. Those who were enslaved, not all were enslaved. They had cattle, they had riches, they had wealth, they had gold and silver, they had a lot of things, and they took a lot with them according to the Old Testament. But anyway, and it says in there that, so here's the Pharaoh about ready to give in, let the Israelites go, free them, let them go away. And you know what it says? It says, God, this is what the Pharisees, the Pharisees say. He wrote most of this stuff, really. And the scribes of Judaism said that God hardened the heart of the Pharaoh. How many lives would hardening the heart of the Pharaoh cost? How many lives of Egyptians? How many lives of Israelites? How many lives of Jews? Because that's what they claim they were. How many lives were cost by that? Jesus said, I came not to kill and punish, I came to save you. I came to heal. I came not to bring you plagues or sickness. I came to heal you. I came to help you, feed you, feed the poor, help you walk again, even help you see. At the same time, he said, very clearly, he said, and this is a very powerful bit of words, but it tells the truth about the reality of the world. He said, my Father and I bring rain upon the good and the bad, the guilty and the innocent. Misfortune happens to people. when the Jews were trying to say to Christ, when he was going to heal a man who was blind from his birth, the Jews wanted to assert that this man had committed sins or something. What did he do to deserve this? Somebody said he's born this way. Or what did his ancestors do to deserve this? And Jesus made it really clear. This man did nothing wrong. He did nothing wrong. He simply was born blind. And I have seen him, and I'm going to heal him. He has faith. I'm going to heal him. I'm going to make him see again, and he did. That's a very interesting factor. This is the teachings of Christ, that God is truly a God of mercy and love. And you don't have to go into mental gymnastics to show that love. Jesus didn't come to bring massive plagues, which is similar to biological warfare. It's like giving poison gas onto the masses. And by the way, the poisoning of wells, for instance, is called anti-Semitism, the poisoning of wells. Well, we can look at the leading historian in Israel. As big articles, and you can read the minarets and other articles, where he's got right out of the records of the IDF and the terrorist organizations that Israel was founded upon, where they literally planned the poisoning of wells. But not only poisons that would kill people who drink the water from these wells indiscriminately, men, women, and children, but also diseases which they poison the wells with. This is all described in detail in the article of, you know, it's called Cast Thy Bread, which is the name of the program that Israel. So not only did we don't know about the Middle Ages, however, there were court cases and sworn testimony and eyewitnesses and evidence that Jews were sometimes poisoning the wells, or during the Black Death, putting in obviously diseased bodies into the wells, thinking, at least motivated by the thought, that they were going to spread this disease to wells that were used by Goyim, the Jews. The most important and revered teacher of Judaism was Maimonides, also called in Jewish texts Rambam. And in there, he was a doctor. He was actually a doctor for the Sultan. Yes, the Sultan. Think about that one. The Islamic Sultan. And he said, quote, he said, don't ever save the life of a Gentile. Don't ever, don't pull them out of the well. Don't stop them from drowning. Don't stop them from dying. The only time, though, you can stop, or you can try to heal them or help them. This is a doctor saying this. You can heal them and help them if the Gentiles are going to find out that you intentionally did not save his life when you could have. In that case, it's okay to practice usury against Gentiles. Usury is a terrible thing. It's condemned. And not only is it condemned in the Bible, it's condemned in the Quran, it's condemned in so many other sources. It's condemned in the Old Testament and the New Testament as an evil, horrible thing. In fact, Maimonides talks about it and defines usury as exorbitant interest, as biting the flesh, seizing the flesh. And that's what happens when you take these loans, and then they compound the interest for peasants that don't know better. They're not even literate necessarily, but they know they're starving and they have to borrow money to feed their kids. He says, this is biting, and you are commanded never to practice usury against a fellow Jew. But it's a good thing if you practice it against a Gentile. There's so many other things like that in Judaism, which is amazing, but that's also in the Old Testament. The New Testament condemns usury, but it makes it really clear that all human beings are sacred to God. All human beings are loved by God. There is no chosen people. That's all over. That's the old covenant. The new covenant has replaced the old covenant. It has been fulfilled in a way, because the underlying argument was God is a God of love and the command. But the truth is that when you read the Old Testament, a lot of things don't sound like love. I'll just give you an example. This is a horrible example. I'm not going to tell you the verses. I want you to look them up. You can just do a search. Do a concordance. Look up the words in the Old Testament where you find them. Cannibalism, eating your children, murdering children to the fourth generation because their parents or their grandparents or their great-grandparents, broke a law. So innocent children are going to be actually murdered. They're being sentenced to being captured by an enemy people and starving. And God is punishing them by this capture and punishing them by starvation. And God is, it's really not God. It's these doggone so-called scribes that Jesus called the lying scribes, that Jeremiah said, the lying pen of the scribes. That has God saying, I'm going to punish you. You are going to have to eat your own little children. It's in a number of places in the Old Testament. You are going to have to, you will murder. You're punished. You're going to murder. You're going to be such straits. You're going to murder your own children and eat their flesh of your sons and daughters. Every culture practically in the world that's dignified or great culture, condemns cannibalism. But to think, according to the scribes of the Old Testament, that Yahweh would command or dictate that they're, because they broke a law to the fourth generation, they're going to punish an innocent child, a very innocent little baby, and their parents by making the parents or forcing the parents to murder, kill, and eat their own children. And it goes into grisly detail to make it as horrible and horrific as it can possibly sound. It's going to be so bad that Israelites will be fighting among themselves. They'll be fighting with their neighbors. They'll be fighting between husband and wife over which one gets to eat the baby that they're going to kill. I mean, I'm not joking. This, if I'm lying, God have mercy on me. I know I'm not lying, so I trust that God will have mercy on me. I'm not lying about this. It's there in the Old Testament. The question is this something that you, as a Christian, that is a follower of Jesus, who believes in the teachings of Jesus, would condone or think was justified or true or wonderful? Is this your conception? You think this is Jesus' conception of his father, which he always called his father? Never called him Yahweh, by the way. He always calls him his father. In John 8:44, he says, if you were of my father, you'd love me. You wouldn't be trying to stone me. And of course, they picked up stones to stone him, which proved exactly that he was telling the truth. This was the spirit of vengeance and murder that Yahweh represented in Yahweh's temple. And these people all followed Yahweh openly. They said, oh, we're followers of Yahweh. We've always have, our forefathers have, Abraham, so forth. We follow Yahweh. But Jesus said, your father is not my father. Your father is not a murderer. Your father, my father is not a murderer. My father is a redeemer. My father loves all humanity. My father forgives. Many other things that are said in the Old Testament that we can't understand. I'm not telling you to go against your teachings. There's a lot of wonderful people in the Catholic Church, Orthodox churches. There's a lot of wonderful people in Christian evangelical churches. there's a lot of Protestants who also have talked about this and mentioned this. The great Martin Luther is a perfect example. The great Calvin, these are the two people that had the biggest impact on the beginning of Protestantism. And a lot of people that are Catholics and Orthodox don't like Protestantism, but I still think that these people, if they were dedicated to Christ and the teachings of Christ and following the words of Christ, I'm not going to oppose them. I'm going to love them. I'm sure not going to go to war against them. Obviously not. Right? But even Jerome, the great Catholic scholar and saint, Saint Jerome, who translated the different parts of the Hebrew text into Latin, and also some of the Greek texts, he translated this. He said, when you read about carnal activities, horrible activities, like Epstein-type activities, take the 32,000 virgins as your booty, as your plunder, you know, kill all the men and kill all the wives and kill all the grandparents and kill all the children, but save those virgin little, and you're a bunch of warriors, right? Save those virgin. And it says in the Old Testament, it goes on to the point, it's not just save those who have not known man by lying with them. Save the virgins. And it says literally the women, children, because that's what children were. Children were virgins by the most part. Most women were married by the age of 17 or 18 in those ancient times. It was children. This was pedophilia, and worse than pedophilia. It was amazing, horrific. And they said the same things, actually, in the Talmud and other structures about even little boys. And you could enslave Christian children, but you could enslave little boys. You could enslave even little Jewish girls could be enslaved for a while. Gentiles you could slave forever and pass it on to generation to generation. And by the way that slavery worked in those times, there's no argument with this, there's no refuting this. The way that slavery worked in those times was that slavery viewed children as simply possessions. In Jewish lore, children weren't even really human beings. They had no protections. I mean, there was commandments in the Old Testament saying, God was saying to the Jews, to run your swords through the bellies, through the wombs of your enemies. That's one of the most naked, horrific forms of abortion I ever heard of. The mother and the child are even, like I said, that what Netanyahu quoted in killing the Palestinians. Anybody that does that, to me, whatever your beliefs about Christianity, is not following the word of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. It's not following the new covenant. It's not following those values. It's following the old covenant, which literally commands that, and even commands to the Jews for their own people, because they broke laws, they're going to be eating their own children. They're going to be beaten by their enemies and succumb to their enemies and eat their own children. This is exactly what a gangster would do in a criminal organization, right? Say, if you don't do right, if you don't do what the boss says, you're going to whatever. We're going to kill your kids. We're going to kill your babies. We're going to have you do horrific crimes against others. This is hard to believe, and I'm sorry to talk about these difficult subjects for a while, but you've got to understand that what you call Christianity and what you say is the word of Christ is the antithesis of the way they present God in the Old Testament. There's lots of apologia for it, but it is the antithesis. That's not saying there are no good things in the Old Testament. There's lots of beautiful things in the Old Testament. But it kind of gets messed up when there's 54 cases of Arim, just mass murder of everybody, man, woman, and child. Jesus, is anybody to make a child so much as stumble? These are fundamental issues. Judaism is the most racist ideology the world's ever seen. If somebody wants to say the Nazis had a terrible ideology, what Judaism says is many times in magnitude worse. I mean, Judaism is as bad as the worst projection of Nazism possible by Hollywood, the enemies of Jews. Before the Second World War, before the alleged Holocaust, I say alleged because that's the way you're supposed to teach things, or you can say they were convicted at Nuremberg. Well, yeah, they were convicted by a lynch mob. They were convicted by the people that were accusing them. They were convicted by a court with judges who were Soviet communist mass murderers of Christians and other in the Soviet Union to the tune of tens of millions of people. They were convicted by that. They were convicted when they couldn't have a witness because the witness was being subject. The witness is for the, against this person. Well, he was present, so he's guilty. I mean, you can't even have a witness. You can't have control of even your defendant's legal case. You can be tortured. And were there tortures in the Nuremberg trials? Yes. There are massive tortures going on there. And this is admitted by Senator Taft, the great Republican senator, who probably would have been president, except for the fact that they made the war hero Eisenhower for the president. But he was honored by JFK in his Profiles of Courage as one of the greatest Americans ever, because Taft actually stood up against the Nuremberg trials and said, this is victor's justice. This isn't justice. This is a lynch mob. You can't get justice in a court where the accusers are the judges, the jury, the prosecution, and the defense. You can't get justice when you have massive torturing of German officers and leaders, torture of the worst nature possible. For instance, he brought testimony before his Senate committees, and he had sworn testimony by Americans that were there at the time. They certainly weren't going to be prosecuted for this, even though these were serious war crimes. This is well after the war, too, by the way, where they testified in their committee and showed of 124 SS officers, right, German officers in their military, in the Wehrmacht and the SS, that of the 124, 123, in the quotation of Taft and the committee, had their testicles damaged and tortured beyond repair. Testicles. I'm telling you, it's a horrible image. It's a horrible thing to put in your mind. But just ask any guy that's out there listening, or any female for that matter, with any empathy, would understand. You put a pair of pliers on somebody's testicle or testicles and you start squeezing it, you can get anybody to say anything. You threaten to do it. You threaten to cut off their manhood. You threaten to rape their children. This happened routinely. You threaten them that the American troops would rape their daughters and their wives unless they swore confessions. The head of Auschwitz himself, the commandant of Auschwitz, there was one commandant of Auschwitz who was convicted of mistreatment of prisoners and executed for it by the Germans long before the end of the war. The other commandant signed the confession, which was obviously an attempt to just give them something. And he said the murder of Jews was 25 million. 25 million was impossible, and that's not promoted by anybody. What was he trying to say? This is all fact. We know it. Whatever it was 20-something million. I don't know what the final number was, but I know it was way more than the alleged 6 million. These things really did occur. And you can't trust that. Did the Jews lie about October 7? Absolutely, they lied about it. They said 40 babies were beheaded. Babies were beheaded. Actually, two babies died, two. There's been at least 1,000 babies in Palestine that have died, blown apart, beheaded, heads knocked off, legs knocked off, dying slow deaths in the rubble of the place they lived, along with their brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and grandparents, just, and many of them alone in the rubble with tons of weight on them, with excruciating pain. What a way to die, alone without their decent mother's embrace, while their mother was dying somewhere else in that rubble. This is horrible. It was all, that was all a lie, though. The Israeli government had to admit it. The total number of children, that's under 18 years old, 17 years old, even, which you can go to the Israel Armed Forces with that, right? And they said that 36 children was the total death toll. Every one of those children should not have been killed, whatever happened. But there is evidence that a lot of those dead were because of the so-called Hannibal Directive, which you don't allow the Palestinians to take prisoners because they didn't want leverage to get out the 5,000 prisoners that Israel was holding before October 7. Most of them without any charges whatsoever. And we now know those prisons were rape farms, were rape and murderous, even homosexual rape and torture, electric prods, barrels of rifles stuck into people's bodies and wrecking the organs within, horrific killing. And these were often many doctors and people who volunteered to go to Gaza to help the people. This is beyond human belief. It's beyond any sort of morality you can think of. This is what Judaism represents. It's all in the Old Testament. Just look up that of God taking credit for telling them that you're going to be, you know, you're going to be forced, you're going to be punished by having to eat your own sons and your own daughters. And of course, you got to murder them first. You got to murder them, then you eat them. That's nice stuff, right? The New Testament is a new covenant. There are things in the Old Testament that are good. There's a lot of things in the Old Testament that are so horrific, they're never quoted in your churches. They're never quoted by your pastors. They're avoided by them. Because if you hear them, you say, is this a loving God? And I don't want any Christian to question whether God's loving. I believe the Father of Christ and his Father in heaven, he was the Son of God, and I do believe that his Father was just like he was, and Christ says absolutely that he and his Father, you know, he's in his Father's in him, he's in us, and we're in him. Christ even says that he expects us, his followers, the believers in him, and the principles of the great commandment, which was love God as a God of love, by the way, and a God like he was, and love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Those are the great, that was the great commandment. You do that, you get to heaven. You do that, you get to heaven. And you have a good life and you do the right thing. But the way that the scribes present Judaism, and they actually redacted the Old Testament, they changed it all. They changed it and continue to change it to this day. Today, basically, things like the Tanya and the Zohar and the Talmud and the Kabbalah literally issue the idea that you are gods, that you are gods. Eric Fromm, the famous Frankfurt School. Frankfurt School is all Jews, by the way, who thought that Karl Marx was going to rule the world. And they didn't call him Karl Marx. They called him Karl Halevi, his real Jewish name. Total Jewish paternity and maternity on both sides. And he was not only he was not an atheist as portrayed. He was actually a Satanist. He did tones of respect for and honoring Mephistopheles, the devil. He told fellow Jews, too, that you're going to be the vanguards of communism, even though he condemned some of the Jewish capitalists. And he did that because everybody was realizing that communism was completely money supported by these rich oligarch Jews. And what did communism do? 100 million dead, really. That's what the United States Congress ruled. But for some reason, you don't hear about that. You don't hear a word hardly. Most of you never even know it. You don't even know what the Holodomor was. The Holodomor is the word for the murder of between 7 and 12 million, or 11 million, I think, is the official number from the research of a 24-nation council, including America, Britain, and a lot of other major European countries. They had a conference in 2003. They compared the historical record that they said the Holodomor was between 7 and 11 million dead. That's more than the number of the Holocaust, according to United Nations 2003 meeting. And yet, do you have 1,000 movies about it like you do about the Holocaust every day? Yet it was more dead. But these were Christian dead. These were Christian dead killed by a Jewish apparatus, Lazar Kaganovich, and these Jewish communists who ran the gulags of Russia. These were Christian dead. I'm not condemning all Jews for this, but do you realize the con that's taking place against you? I love y'all. We're out of time now. Just if you want to make a gift, go to Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. Just send it to me and tell me it's a gift. And thank you so much for supporting this great work. Bye-bye.